We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. This week, I'm chatting with Rebecca Tennis of Wild Ink Press. Wild Ink Press is a letterpress studio and retail storefront located in Northern California. Rebecca started Wild Ink Press in 2009 and was part of our very first Trade Show Bootcamp class in 2011. The Wild Ink Press brand offers witty and pretty greeting cards, stationery, and other paper goods that can be found in hundreds of retail shops nationwide, including The Container Store, Papyrus, and Paper Source. On today's episode, Rebecca talks about the power of slow organic growth and why it's okay to not have all your ducks in a row when you're starting out. She also shares her thoughts on responsiveness, reliability, and why she likes to send catalogs and samples to prospective wholesale buyers. Hey, Rebecca, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, Katie, I'm glad to be here.
Oh, it's so fun to chat with our alumni, and I'm really excited for you to share your story today. Can you start at the beginning and tell me, how did Wild Ink Press get its start? What's your story? What led you to this business?
Sure. You know, Wild Ink Press kind of started in a bit of a roundabout way because unlike a lot of stories that I've heard, it didn't start with like designing my own wedding invitations and falling in love. And in fact, I think technically my best friend from college did my wedding invitations and we put it in the neighborhood shop and they were like less than $100, you know,
nice.
One color. That was how low key I was about my wedding. No, but I got my degree in graphic design. So I was always in the, you know, fine arts and commercial arts world. Originally I worked for a firm in Sacramento. I actually worked for the state and I love design of all forms, but you find certain aspects of it can be quite unfulfilling. And for me, I hated the unfinished nature of most design projects. Like someone's always tweaking your logo and making it wider, taller. Someone's always taking your, you know, annual report that you very carefully put together and putting it in Microsoft Word or something that just... You weren't working for yourself. You were always working for sometimes people that just had no idea what design even was.
Right.
And then sometimes people with just very different visions, which wasn't as bothersome, but still didn't feel as fulfilling as doing my own projects. Yep. So about, I think, 3 years into my career, I ended up going out freelance, which I thought would be more like working for myself. And you know, I started building my client base and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the flexible hours. I enjoyed working directly with people, but it still had that element of unfinished. So I basically, right around the time that we decided we were going to move back to my husband's hometown, I thought this is a good time for a fresh start. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, you know what? I was really in love with letterpress at the time, which you become familiar with. We'd done printmaking at school when I was in college, and I was just aware of it just based on it being the finish you want to add to all your cool print projects.
Right.
So I dragged my husband down to the Center for the Book, San Francisco Center for the Book, and we took a series of classes. They're expensive, but we just bit the bullet and did it. And we took, you know, all the way through on the Vandercook and then also on the Chandler and Price, the advanced classes. And then we bought a press off of eBay.
Wow.
It was a huge, you know, 1600 pound, 1908 Chandler and Price 10x15. And we just carted it up to our new home in Chico. And I decided I was just going to start Wild Ink Press, fresh start in Chico and just start a new type of business. So I kind of shuttered my freelance clients slowly, one at a time, and started up by printing, gosh, a lot of different things. Like I printed my very first greeting card, which we still sell. And I, you know, did some sample wedding invitations. I did a bunch of different things. And then we just, after about 6 months, just had enough printed material that we just threw together like an opening, like a grand opening, like come see this for our community. So it's kind of just like putting it out there. And I had no idea how people would respond or what would happen. I put together a website. And it kind of has grown just organically from there. Those were our very humble beginnings. That was June of 2009.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So from 2009 to 2011, I would say we operated on kind of a much smaller scale. We did some wedding invitations, business cards. We kind of cut our teeth with San Francisco clients.
I was going to ask, when you brought this letterpress back to Chico and, you know, you're doing wedding invitations and some cards and things like that, did you know whether you wanted to take this business more the commercial route with off-the-shelf products or custom work with the wedding invitations? Or were you kind of just waiting to see what came your way and what people were interested from you?
That's a great question. I had no idea. I was like throwing things at the wall and seeing what stuck, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew I wanted to do this. I knew that I loved designing for print. I didn't mind doing wedding invitations. They had good margins, you know?
Yep.
But I didn't know that the greeting card thing was going to stick. I just did a couple and they became kind of popular. The very first card I did at our grand opening in June 2009, it was the weekend before Father's Day. And it was this card that said, I was going to get you a tie, but then I saw this tie card and I figured you'd wear it just as often. And it was shaped like a tie and we kind of folded down the corners of the collar so that it looked like a tie. The card looked like a shirt.
Right.
Well, that card is still sold in a, you know, a whole, I mean, it's still one of our most popular Father's Day cards. So it's kind of funny to think that it just sort of started so I would have something to print at my grand opening. And I had no idea that people would think it was funny.
Right, right.
So yeah, I guess it sort of fell into the greeting card thing. And I really liked it because you are really doing it for yourself. Yes, you're trying to figure out what the market wants, but it is that moment of like, I'm making a card because I think this is real to me and funny to me or interesting to me, or I would send this to somebody.
Yep. I was just going to say, you have somebody in mind that you know would purchase it or use it.
Exactly. So then you're just putting something out there and saying, hey, like this or don't like this. So it was kind of, that's where it kind of got grew from, I guess you could say.
Wow. So things have evolved quite a bit since your start in 2009. You now have a team that helps you out.
Yes.
You have a retail storefront. Like let's kind of peel back the layers a little bit here. Who do you have on your team right now? And who was the first person you hired? Like what roles are they?
Right. So we have four people currently on our team besides my husband and I. So four hires. And the person we originally hired is no longer with us, but her position is obviously still there.
Right.
So back in 2012 was our first hire. So 2011, I went to the National Stationery Show, which is when I kind of took things up to the next level, kind of ratcheted it up, put out the risks. And in 2012, we had gotten picked up by Peepersource and Papyrus. And so there was not enough, Matt and I couldn't pull it off anymore.
Yeah.
So I hired this wonderful girl named Elizabeth, who was basically an assistant on all levels. She was like shipping. She did email answering. She did, checking inventory stock. And so she kind of filled all those little roles. And she was part-time, but she was pretty happy with that. That was the way it worked out for her. So it was a really nice way for us to ease into having employees, which is quite scary.
It is very, yeah. Absolutely.
And then our next big hire was the moment when we decided we needed a pressman because my husband does have a real job, you know, so he's a farmer. And so we had been printing all these late nights, 2 a.m., you know, both of us on letterpresses, me printing, scoring, and him, you know, running the Heidelberg, which I never learned how to run. We now have 6 presses, but basically we had to hire pressmen, and that was actually trial and error quite a bit.
In terms of finding the right person or in terms of?
Well, because we didn't know what we were, it's hard to, letterpress is such a, you know, specific thing. And Chico is actually quite a removed community in Northern California. So we didn't have a lot of big city draw. So we didn't have a lot of people familiar with letterpress. Like you're interviewing people and you're explaining to them what it is.
Yeah,
which you have to be okay with.
And you have to be okay with the training aspect. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So basically everybody that we hired, which there were two before we found our current pressman who has been great for us long term, there's about 6 months of training you put into it. And then sometimes it doesn't even stick because the attention to detail is super important and sometimes it just doesn't work out. So
yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of a big growing experience for us.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
I think hiring anyone for your team is, you know, definitely a risk and it feels very big. I like that you said your first person was a part-time kind of generalist that wore a lot of different hats, because I do think that's a really great entry point for anyone that's considering hiring, to start small and, you know, work your way into a job a little bit more and
right.
see what people can do.
Yeah. So currently we have our full-time pressman, and then we have a full-time design / wholesale manager. She kind of does both hats, and actually she's leaving me in January. So I'm trying to find somebody to fill that slot right now. There's turnover. She's been with us for 2 years and she's been amazing, but she's switching towns. But she feels it could be too high. It could be two part-time jobs, but she was really happy with the full-time and the variety. Mm-hmm. I try to find what my employees enjoy doing. So, and then we also have two packaging and retail personnel. So they both run the retail shop in terms of ringing customers up and being there and being present in the front, and then also packaging all our orders.
Awesome. What was your catalyst for wanting to open up the retail shop in addition to having your studio space?
Well, the shortest version of that is we were in my back behind the house double garage, and we were way beyond permitting for the number of people that were working for us. It's like, where are you going to hide your cars? Our neighbors were really nice to us, but we needed a space downtown bad. And the real estate market was actually quite depressed at the time. So we saw a lot of opportunities in some kind of abandoned buildings in the downtown area. Mm-hmm. We just started knocking on empty doors and saying, hey, is this for rent? Is this for sale? And this one that we found, which had been an old assessor's building, it was a mess. But it had a lot of square footage and a good location. And they required retail in order for us to be downtown.
Oh, interesting.
And so we were like, okay. So the box we technically checked was retail with artisan manufacturing. So that was, and I wrote a whole little letter about why our manufacturing was not normal manufacturing. It was artisan because they don't put factories downtown. Right. So it was a big little like, and so I was like, okay, I had to like sort of convince Matt, my husband, that we could do like 500 square feet of retail and it wouldn't really change our focus. And mm-hmm. What's amazing is I didn't expect what a beautiful benefit it would be to our business. I did not know that it would just automatically pay for itself. I did not know that customers would love coming in to see our work. There's all these things that were just surprises because you think it's going to be a hassle. And I think sometimes for people that have a separate retail space, it can be, because you've got to juggle employees and you got to juggle staffing and all these other things. But for us, it was a really natural flow to just put all our cards up front and then be like, oh, I really want to carry these candles or this. And it just sort of grew from that. And the community was really responsive. So
it's fun to hear you talk about how you kind of fell into this retail space, because I'm hearing more and more from our alumni community and my coaching clients that they're setting out to find spaces where they can have a retail shop at the front end and have a space for manufacturing in the back. And it sounds like you were maybe a little hesitant at first.
I was, because I didn't know how it was going to work with staff. I wasn't really looking to have a huge staff. I didn't know what it was going to look like with people seeing all of our presses, kind of like having the guts of your organization open.
Right.
So it was a little intimidating for me. And I'd never done retail in my life before, you know?
Yeah.
And my previous, you know, college jobs, I was a secretary. I was not retail. So it was definitely a big leap of faith.
Oh, yeah. Well, and full of unknowns, like you talked about. But I'm so glad it's worked out.
Yeah.
Let's talk about wholesale marketing and outreach to retailers, because wholesale is a big part of your business. Has your strategy for pitching other retailers to sell your goods to them, has that changed now that you're also a buyer?
You know, that is a great question. I would say it has definitely affected how I approach retailers, because I get approached, probably not as frequently as them, but I get approached enough. I mean, let's say from, you know, your average people send, I get emails probably about 6 to 10 a week, you know, of pitches. And sometimes you can see when they really come at a wrong time, or someone does 3 or 4 in a row. And you're like, it starts to be this annoying where you're like, even if I was thinking about picking up this line, I'm just not going to, because it's making too much noise in my inbox.
Yep.
So it has really affected how I did things. I used to do things that were a little bit more reliable on email blasts, but I have found as a retailer who buys, there is nothing like receiving a catalog with two cards. because you just get it in the mail. It's sitting on your desk. You can stick it under your desk to read later. And it doesn't get lost like email does. And there's two cards there and maybe a note. And you're looking at actually how they printed it and what the quality of their work is. And you know what I do? And maybe people will get mad at this, but I stick it on our shelf. And if it sells in the first 2 days, you're probably going to get carried by me. Because it's not like I'm there to make money off of your one card. I'm there to test your card out. And I'm assuming that's why you sent it to me. Yeah. And so I hope that someone would do that with my card if I sent them a catalog and a couple cards to sort of just give it a shot and be like, hey, let's see how well my cards do on our, you know, on our shelf.
So for you, let's say I send you a catalog and two samples and you get the package and, you know, I always tell people to use a tiered method of approach. So I am I'm a fan of sending stuff in the mail too, especially if your products are, you know, lower cost that you can send samples. But how quickly do you want to hear from somebody after you receive their packet? Do you want them to send a personalized email with some additional information a week or two later? Or do you want it to be a longer wait than that?
You know, I think 2 weeks is a good time period. 2 weeks from when you think I received it is a really good time period, because it's like enough time where if I've for some reason forgotten about it, it's a good memory jug, you know, but it doesn't look like you're being super pushy, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've found that that's pretty effective.
Awesome. And for you reaching out to your stores, how often are you sending those snail mail packages? Are you doing it, you know, as you're releasing new products or in between? Or just
Yeah, so we usually do a double catalog run with our trade shows, which we do except for this year because of the baby. We do three. I'm pregnant. Sorry, I didn't say that earlier on the show, but I'm due in January, so I'm not going to New York now. But typically we do, there'd be the winter show, the summer show, and the stationery show in the spring. We would mail a catalog. We would do a double printing of the catalogs and mail them after that show with samples and a note. That's typically our timing. It's usually kind of geared towards specific when people buy for specific holidays.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, knowing those release schedules is really important if you're doing wholesale, because if you send it too early, people aren't paying attention. If you send it too late, you miss that sales window.
It's true. Although interestingly, I've found that our reps operate on a different time schedule than our stores do. So like when I send it to a rep, she likes it at a different time than a lot of our stores like it a little bit later. You know?
Yeah, the reps like it even earlier because their appointment times are so different.
At this point, I'm designing Christmas a year before. I just don't bother. I'm like, right in season now.
I know. It's funny. When we talk about release schedules, we often show like the two tiers of like, if you're reaching out directly, here's when they want to see it. But if you're working with reps, here's where you want to prepare for it.
So. Yes.
It's different. You know, I talk a lot about building relationships, especially with, you know, the wholesale accounts you're working with. What do you do to nurture relationships with the stores that you're working with as the manufacturer?
Well, I think that it's really important. This is another thing where it comes to me as a retailer. I feel like the biggest way you can show someone respect, value, and nurture a relationship is to be so responsive. And so I find that the best way we can nurture those relationships with our stores is our shipping turnaround just being as quick as possible, and our email responses and that sort of thing just being as quick as possible. So typically if somebody places an order, it's going to go out in 2 days. And I know that that's not possible for everybody. We have a team that can do that. And so, I mean, we have people that they know, and our shipping is typically priority mail. So they know that if they order something, they're going to have it within 4 days, probably less. And that makes a big difference to me as a buyer, because I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, I forgot this thing for Christmas. And if somebody, you place an order, I mean, for example, I had to place an order that I had hoped would be here for Christmas preview, and it still hasn't shipped yet. And I mean, you know, so it's just tough as a buyer. You're like, okay, I've ordered that 3 weeks ago. I can follow up again. But I think that a lot of the ways that we've gotten our sort of long-term stores that really come back all the time is by just being that sort of, you know, responsive. We write a note with every order and we ship it out right away.
It's a reliability factor too. I mean, I've talked to so many retailers over the years that come and speak at our paper camp conference and things like that. And, you know, if they run out of Valentine's Day cards early and they need, you know, they're going to look to their go-tos that ship quickly, that have inventory ready to go. You know, it's the same thing. It's the responsiveness and the reliability that you can deliver. So I think
you can count on.
Yeah. So, you know, running a retail space and a successful wholesale program, you're juggling a family. It's a lot. How do you personally manage all of that?
Oh, maybe I don't. I mean, I do. The story I often say when I'm talking about this is I describe myself as a Jill of all trades, but master of none. I have this secret feeling that I could have taken Wilding Press way to the next level by now if I had really wanted to, or I could have gone full on in the family route and my children could be way better behaved. Or, you know, the retail space. I just feel like there's all these things that I'm doing okay at, and I've decided that's all right for my life. You know, mm-hmm. I've always had this sort of approach to life, which is I'd rather dabble in a whole bunch of things. And I know this is not for everybody, and be more of a Renaissance woman who likes to, you know, do music and likes to do all these different things that add up to, you know, maybe not being as great at your one thing. And, you know, I still feel like oftentimes whenever I'm going to add something on, my husband will be like, is Wilding Press going to make it through this? Like, in other words, this thing you're adding to your life, are you going to be able to fit all this in? And I found that the balance of having all these things, like making the time to go work out really early in the morning, or maybe missing a day at work that other people can take care of so you can do something with your kids, makes it all of it worth it, because I love all of it and it can be overwhelming at times, but I found that just being able to know that I'm dabbling in a bunch of things gives me that, I guess, sense of peace that I've got this situation where it's all crazy, but I enjoy all of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that explains it well enough, but.
No, it does. I mean, you're soon to be mom of four. I'm a mom of four, and I get asked this question a lot of like, how do you do it all? And I agree with you that there's no one right answer to it. And every day is different. And, you know, you just do your best. But one thing I do want to commend you on is you have built foundation in each of these things that are really important to you. You know, you've built a staff at Wilding Press, and you've got your retail, you know, you've built systems in place that allow you the freedom and flexibility that you have to take a day off or to go spend time with your family or, you know, whatever it might be to do these shows. So I do think it's important for you to acknowledge that you have done that hard work and to, you know, pat yourself on the back, because you are doing a lot, and but you're doing it well too. So kudos to you.
Well, thank you. You know, I feel like maybe I should have said this a little bit earlier in the interview, but I want people to know, with starting Wilding Press and all the various things that I do, we never had a smash hit. We never had a viral card. We never were the it person at the show. We were never any of, and I know that there's people well-deserved who hear all those things and they become the buzz company or the buzz product. I feel like every single step of the way, Wilding Press has been all the hard work and all the scramble, you know? And so I feel like where we are now is just like, we're just going to keep putting in the hours, and you know, you can build one layer after another, and we've done it all debt free. And so it just is like this level of like, okay, can we move into this retail space? Okay. Can we add an employee? It's just, and you just make a little bit of space at a time and it grows into what it is. So I want people out there to be encouraged if they feel like, oh, well, this is hard. And I'm not getting a smash hit. It doesn't always work that way.
No. And frankly, I love what you said, because this is a marathon. This is not a sprint. Running a business is trying to be strategic and thoughtful in that next step and just layering new on, or deciding that something's not working anymore for you and pulling that layer off. I think it's so impactful for you to say that. I think it's great for people to hear that it's just putting one foot in front of the other every day and doing the hard work. But also, you have kept your eye on the prize in terms of what you want your goals to be and where you want this company to go. I mean, yes, the retail side was a little bit of a, oh, surprise, but you've done such amazing things with it, you know, and you took a situation that you weren't necessarily expecting or planning for, and you turned it into something great.
Yeah, it's been an adventure.
Business is, isn't it? Entrepreneurship is all of it. Well, you know, we've talked about a few different transitional times for Wild Inc., but like, are there any other, you know, you moved and you've done shows in the retail shop. Like, is there another example of a transitional time that you can think of and that share with us and how you got through it?
Well, I'm facing one right now. So that's maybe not like exactly, that's still in the future. I mean, honestly, each of my children, which when I started Wilding Crest in 2009, I had a two-year-old, one two-year-old, which seems really easy now that I think about it. But, you know, all of our three boys were adopted. And so each of them, I never took a maternity leave. And with your own business, what does maternity leave even look like? You know, so it's kind of that decision. But I, you know, definitely adjusted my hours associated with working with them. But they were, you know, more 1 year old, you know, each when they came, except for my oldest, who was a baby. And so there was that moment of like, okay, I've got two kids. How is this going to flow with this? What am I going to do related to childcare? There was a lot of strategic thinking, rethinking, and definitely each time was a growing thing for me of, gosh, I don't even know how to express it, but basically stretching yourself in a new way. And I actually found that better cards came out of that. Like maybe there weren't as many that year, but when I think of the years that I had the hardest time, 2012 was when we won, you know, the best new product stationery show. And I pulled those cards together in 2 months because we had just come back from Korea. And so then if you look at, you know, just a year later, each of the times that I've found that I've under more stress, I found that you find yourself something in yourself to rise to the occasion. So I guess that's maybe not giving a lot of coping mechanisms. It just means that you'll find that you're stronger than you think you are. Mm-hmm. And now I'm facing this new challenge of, you know, the baby's due January 6th. And, you know, my right hand wholesale/designer is having to move and she's given notice for January 1st. So I'm trying to find a new hire and figure out how my maternity leave is going to look. And I really will still want to do a killer release in January. So you're putting all these together and you're like, okay, what's this going to be? I don't know. It's going to be the best I can do, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that I was just going to say, it's going to be the best you can do. You took the words out of my mouth. I, you know, having been in the same situation with children over the years and my maternity leaves look very different places. You know, my first two, I was in a corporate gig with my businesses operating on the side. And I almost felt like it was awesome that I had that maternity leave because I could spend time with my family, but also work on my business more than I could when I, anyhow. But my point is, it ebbs and flows, right? There's different challenges that come our way. And I know you're going to handle it with grace. And if you ever need anything, give me a call.
Totally. Just somebody to complain at, right?
Exactly. Hey, commiserate, support each other. That's what we're here for. So, you know, if you were just starting out right now, or you were sitting down with somebody for coffee that was just starting a product-based business, what advice would you give them as somebody that's been doing this for a while?
Yeah, that is a great question. I would say the advice that I would give them would be don't be afraid to not have your ducks in a row. And I know that sounds super counterintuitive, but when I went to the stationery show in 2011, I probably wasn't ready, but I don't think I would have had the 2012 if I hadn't done the 2011, and 2012 was our breakout year. But I wouldn't have had that unless I'd just gone in. There wasn't as many materials. I mean, I was in your original Trade Show Bootcamp podcast, listen in, how are we going to build a booth, you know, 2011 class, right? And there wasn't anything out there. For the resources were much more slim. And so you just go and then you're like, oh, well, retailers kind of wanted more cards, you know, that kind of thing. And so, but I feel like I really learned. And so I didn't consider it all a loss. I also didn't point my business too quickly in a direction that I would later regret, because I had the abilities to take that time from my mistakes to put things out that were really me. And so I feel like making those mistakes, you don't have to have your ducks in a row. You can, but you might regret it later if you find out, you know, maybe you're a chicken factory.
Well, and I think it's good to assess the mistakes and really look at them hard. I mean, you've heard my story. I had lots of missteps along the way building my stationery line. And, you know, I look back at them now and it did lead me to build a stronger business. It did lead me to, you know, you have to make a few mistakes to find your path and to find what you want to do. So I like that advice. That's good advice. What's next for Wilding Press? What do you got coming up aside from a baby?
Well, you know, we're just, We're looking forward. I'm actually planning to take that baby to the stationery show. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully the ergo pulls it together.
It will.
Because, you know, there's nothing like showing up. So we're planning to continue releasing new product. We've got some fun collaborations planned this next year, which I can't. We've done a couple collaborations in the past. Every year I try to go a bit bigger. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm very excited about them.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Good. And where can people find you online if they want to check out your products or follow you on social media?
Sure. So our website is www.wildinkpress.com. That's I-N-K. And then on Instagram, our handle is Wild Ink Press. And also on Facebook, it's the same.
Excellent. Well, we'll be sure to include those links in the show notes for anyone that wants to check out what you're offering. And Rebecca, thank you so much for your time today. It was really fun to chat with you and hear all that you're working on. So thank you.
You are so welcome. It was my pleasure.
Hey friends, a little fun fact for you today. Did you know that most of the brands that we interview here on this podcast are Trade Show Bootcamp alumni? Some of them are speakers and some are friends, but the large majority of the people I've talked to on this podcast are alumni. They have come through and attended our PaperCamp conference or our PaperCamp e-course. And both of these programs are aimed at helping stationery gift companies launch or refine their wholesale program. So we talk about everything from developing their product and ensuring it's ready for wholesale, to launching it to the market and working with sales reps, getting in front of buyers, and all the way down to exhibiting at trade shows, wholesale trade shows, similar to New York Now and the National Stationery Show. We cover it all because we want you to be educated and informed in how you're making decisions for your business. Now, many of you have been asking, when's the next program? When is PaperCamp going to run again? And I'm excited to tell you that we opened registration for our 2018 program. PaperCamp Conference is only going to run once in 2018, and the dates are March 1st and 2nd, and will be in Los Angeles. Historically, I've run this program twice a year for the last several years, but I'm cooking up some other fun things for the fall, so we are only going to offer PaperCamp in person and live one time in 2018. And if you want to get more information about how the live program compares with our e-course program, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp and you can learn more and also grab your seat. Now, I should mention, like all of our PaperCamp conferences, this is an intimate event. We keep the numbers small so that you can get your questions answered and you can have time networking with our speakers as well as the other attendees. So seats are very limited and we sell out every time. And since we're only offering this once next year, I really encourage you to grab your seat if you intend on coming. More information is available at tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.